Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, Merrill Meisler is a New York-based photographer who's been there, done that, and has the negatives to prove it. She was there for New York's disco boom in the 70s, including the famous Studio 54, and after that specialised in street photography, documenting, among other places, the life of the residents of Bushwick in New York. Now she's here for the Dublin Street Photography Festival taking place this weekend, but she'll be taking a few snaps of her own along the way. Merrill, good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon. It's so nice to be here.
When did you start taking pictures? When you were a child?
When I was 7 years old, my parents gave me a camera called the Adventurer. So I started taking photographs then of family, friends, school trips, same things I still take photographs
yes.
of.
And when did you think this is going to be my career now?
When did I think it would become my passion? In 1973, I took a photography class in college because I'd seen the Dion Arbus show at MoMA. And I was like, oh, I should learn how to take real pictures.
Yeah.
And I always felt a kinship.
Yeah. And after that, then you did grow up in Long Island. But
Yes. I grew up in suburbs of New York City, Long Island. My father was a passionate family photographer and... And when I went to college, my degree is in art education, and then I got my master's. And while getting my master's, I was taking photography classes. And I've not been a commercial photographer. I've always made my living doing something else.
Teaching, mostly.
I was an illustrator, and then I was a New York City public school art teacher for 31 years.
Oh, my God. Well, that's a proud record to have. So after college, then, you moved to New York, and this would have been when, about the mid-70s?
Yeah, I moved to New York City in 1975.
Yeah. Oh.
And
what was it like then?
It was rough. It was dirty. It was down and out. I felt right at home.
Okay.
Like I was young. I was confused. I felt like I immediately felt like I belonged there.
Yeah. And was when you arrived, disco had already taken off then, I assume?
No, there was disco songs were happening and people were learning. I remember my brother's wedding and they did the Hustle. But the discos themselves didn't become a huge phenomenon until around 77 and 76.
Okay.
But I started going in 77.
Yeah. And what clubs in 77 would have been the big clubs, apart from Studio 54?
Well, I think the first club I went to was Copacabana, Haraz. You caught me out, Haraz, Gigi Barnum. Infinity.
Okay, that's
it was nonstop club. They were everywhere.
Yeah, and would they run all night long until the following morning?
Go out at 10 p.m. and they'd still be open at 4. I'd usually leave around 4. You know.
Okay.
They were really open all the time.
And Studio 54, seemed to attract all the big names, plus it was also notoriously difficult to get into.
Mm-hmm.
How did you devise a strategy of how you were going to get in there?
Well, I have a friend, Judy Jupiter. We were disco buddies, and originally, and going to clubs, and when Studio 54 opened, she contacted the PR people, and we went in together and said we were photographers, and they put us on the list.
Oh, okay. That was pretty easy.
And then I never published anything, but the doorman liked us. So we'd go.
Yeah.
Once they kind of knew you, it was like, come on in.
Yeah. And so did you have to dress up in anything outrageous to get in or?
No, but it was usually a theme.
Yeah.
And Judy would get more dressed up, and I would be appropriate or I'd help her. She was more theatrical.
Yeah.
But I would, play along, go with the theme of the night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And was it always the same? Because was it the doorman who would decide who got in and who didn't? Or he was judging people on their fashion
sense? It was initially we were on the list.
Yeah.
But then it was the doorman.
Yeah.
And so if they were not happy with you that night or for some reason, So no, it didn't even bother me. It was just like a reason to check out another club.
Yeah.
There's so many.
Yeah.
So it was no big deal.
Yeah. Inside Studio 54, one has the impression that it was pure debauchery in there. Is that correct?
There was a lot of it.
Yeah.
Well, actually, when it first opened, it didn't even have a liquor license. So I guess people invented their own means.
Oh, right.
But,
okay.
But it wasn't pure debauchery. It was costumes, dancing, people having fun, great music on the spot, beautiful decor, and amazing people.
Yeah. Did people mind having their photograph taken
there? You know, it's funny. It's like there were actually a lot of photographers because a lot of paparazzi people from the press, but I was not. I would always ask permission. I was there primarily to go out as a young person and dance. But if I saw someone interesting, I'd have to take their photograph. And usually they said yes, because they're looking fabulous. They're feeling fabulous. Why not? But I didn't find it. It's more difficult now to photograph in clubs.
Would imagine so. Yes. Yeah. I would imagine it's extremely difficult now. So a lot of those photographs would have been from Studio 54 with people posing for you rather than, you know, your...
No, I'm not. That's why it's funny. I'm part of a street photography festival, but I feel like my nightlife is definitely extension of my street photography eye, because I don't pose people.
Yeah.
I see them and ask to photograph them. And I don't pose that. Even then, or even now, it's not how I do. And they're presenting themselves.
Yeah.
How's that?
Okay. So, you won't tell them, I suppose. But I assume as soon as you know you're having a photograph taken, you will pose somehow.
You're looking. Yeah. Yes. You present yourself as you wish to be presented.
Yes.
And there's an obvious awareness that they're seeing me. And I did photograph people doing things that could have got them arrested elsewhere, but they knew I was doing it. They gave me permission.
Oh, wow.
But I didn't show the work for decades.
Yeah.
So it's so funny.
Yeah, why didn't you?
I didn't know. First of all, I didn't even think it was that special. I wasn't working for doing it as a living. I was taking them. I wasn't getting them published. I was doing them like, there was a photographer called Versailles, who photographed 1930s Paris nightlife. And he was my inspiration, because I felt like this is my 30s Paris. And there were so many photographs of the clubs, I didn't even think mine were unusual. And of course, time passed, and I did become a school teacher, and it certainly wouldn't have been appropriate. How's that?
Yeah, fair enough. But it is interesting, because you were were you teaching in Bushwick all the time? You were teaching.
No, I started in Manhattan.
Yeah,
and the Upper West Side, then the Lower East Side, and then I was, in an area called East New York, and then I was in Bushwick for 14 years, and then my last half of career, I was back in Manhattan.
Yeah, because I my impression is Bushwick couldn't have been more different to Studio 54.
No, it was at the time. Right now, Bushwick is a very hot neighborhood. When I arrived there, it was burnt out. Yes.
Riots or just?
Well, in neglect. And in the summer of 77 in New York City, there was a tremendous blackout. And it was a famous...
Oh, that was the Son of Sam.
I lived through the Summer Sam and the classic. And there was a huge blackout. And the next day, the radio people like you were saying, the Bronx is burning. But then there was a neighborhood to say, Bushwick is burning. And I'd never heard, the day after the blackout, when the news has come on, this neighborhood called Bushwick. And you just saw photographs of arson and fires and people looting, and it certainly didn't sound like someplace I would ever go to.
Yeah.
But who knew I'd end up being there for 14 years.
Yeah.
And no, in the long run, it made my career. That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
Okay, it made my career. I was there. I was seeing things. I realized it when I first arrived to interview for the job, because I wanted a job. In my country, you don't get healthcare and things like that. You better get good luck. I want a job with benefits. And I was appointed, something where like told, take this job and you can, or forget it. You'll never get a real job. Mm. And I took the job and it really looked like there was a war there the week before.
Yeah.
So to go back, during the blackout of July 77, there were looting and fires, but it didn't start then.
Yeah, no, yeah.
There were other reasons that led to that, and then there was another fire where some kids were playing, like a few weeks later, two boys were playing in a knitting factory and, just throwing
the whole thing
matches, but it blew, and it blew up.
And I assume then the kids you were teaching in Bushwick were quite different from the kids in Manhattan, for instance, in terms of their background and poor circumstances.
Yeah, the kids in the neighborhood that time it was a lot of the problems of poverty or people losing their homes.
Yeah.
And doubling up. But then that's actually why I started photographing, because walking back to the subway in school, it's like, kids are kids.
Yeah.
They were playing basketball. They were running in the street. They were just being kids. And so I got a point-and-shoot camera, and I would just take pictures of things I found uplifting going to and from school, because I wasn't going to, it was my job. I wasn't there for a day, a week, or a month. It was my job and what I did for a living, and I didn't photograph things. I didn't take that would make me not want to get up and go to work the next day. So even though there was drug problems, and you might be seeing needles and crack vials and garbage and people down and out, I didn't photograph that. Mm. I looked for the
uplift. Yeah, well, and was there a sense of community there, even though people on the outside might go, oh, that's a dodgy place?
Absolutely, yes. There was a sense of community there. And it increased for me while I was there, because I would recognize people on this block, or they would say, oh, that's Miss Myers, a very formal, the art teacher. Or I had their brothers or their sisters or their cousins, generations. I felt a welcoming.
Yeah.
At first it was scary, but then it's like, no, it's just like, I kind of really liked it.
Yeah. Once you get. And nowadays, when you do, you're still doing street photography, what are you looking for?
I'm always attracted to people expressing joy, expressing confidence and joy, and loving being in the life right now in the moment.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it. Or I photograph expressions of joy. If I see something that I've never seen before, it's like, I've just never seen anyone wearing something like that or walking like that. I'm the kind who likes to ask, may I take your picture?
Yeah.
Or it seems so typical. In the United States, there's an artist, Norman Rockwell, who painted very Americana scenes, and it looked like I'm seeing a Norman Rockwell painting come to life. So it's something that says either something so typical or something so unusual, or it literally makes me laugh.
Yeah.
It just makes me crack up.
Does it feel like we live in a world where we need that positivity more than ever?
I think we definitely need to focus on more positive things, because otherwise you just want to just lay down and not get up.
This
is tough. It's tough.
Yeah, you can sing that one. That's for sure. Yeah. Meryl, thank you so much for coming in to speak with us
today.
Thank
you very much.
And what day are you giving your talk?
Well, I think everyone know that the street Friday night will be the opening. It's free, and there are talks Saturday and Sunday. It's free and open to the public. I will be speaking Saturday night, 7:30, and it's right there at the Charman Square, and it's going to be happening.
It's going to be happening. If you turn up and you look at all interesting, you never know. Merle might want to take your picture. Merle, thanks a million.
My pleasure.
Lovely to meet you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.